All right, Alexandra, let's talk about all the protests that are happening throughout Europe. Most notably, the two big ones are France and Greece, and both governments, the Macron and the Mitsotakis government, they announced various mandatory things that are going to take place for the population in terms of access to non-essential services. Bars, restaurants, shopping malls, they're going to need these special passports, these QR codes. And I see it here in Cyprus as well, these QR codes, which will give them access to non-essential services. This is a big deal. People are very upset. There's other stuff that Macron announced as well with regards, I believe, to the retirement age. Mitsotakis also announced other stuff with regards to getting children jabbed, teenagers jabbed. So there are other things, but I think the big one that put people onto the streets was the fact that you're going to be taking away freedom to just do basic things in life, go to a cafe, for example. Anyway, we also have Spain, and this is an interesting part because I want you to talk about the human rights aspect. I heard a lot of that from the protests in Greece. People were chanting about their human rights, their freedom, their right to go out and live their life and go to a restaurant and go to a shopping mall, their right for bodily autonomy, which back in the day, I believe, was the most essential, the most important human right. A Spanish court said this, and I'm reading to you from Summit News, Spain's top court rules that the lockdown was unconstitutional. And this was a lawsuit that was brought by the Vox Party in Spain. Now, we've talked a lot that a lot of these lawsuits have never gotten to the highest of courts in Europe for them to be binding. But in Spain, once again, we're seeing maybe something get through the armor of these EU policies, yeah. But we're not quite there yet. What do you make of everything's going on, Alexander?
Yeah, right. Let's talk about the Spanish case, because that does look like it might be more of a breakthrough. Because, of course, again, I'm not exactly clear as to the level of the court here. But it's important to understand that there is a distinction between human rights law and constitutional law. Now, the European Convention on Human Rights actually provides and allows for lockdowns and restrictions on people's freedoms in order to combat infections. Believe it or not, it's actually there in the European Convention on Human Rights. And that was always made as a pure reflection of human rights law. It's very difficult to challenge it in human rights courts. But there are also constitutions. And constitutions sometimes, in fact, very often, interpret human rights more broadly than this and talk more about freedom of the person. Now, this court, and I'm not sure exactly of the level of the court, has said that the lockdown violated Spain's constitution. In other words, it's not a European Convention on Human Rights. It's the constitution itself.
It's the top court, Alexander. That's what I'm reading.
Well, there you go. So it's contrary to Spain's constitution. Now, if it's contrary to Spain's constitution, then you don't need to consider the European Convention on Human Rights. You don't need to consider those other aspects of human rights law. Because, of course, every country is bound by the terms of its constitution. So that means two things, it seems to me. Firstly, the lockdown was unconstitutional in Spain and therefore illegal. And, of course, if it was illegal in Spain, then it means that all those people whose businesses were affected by the lockdown can presumably sue for the losses they experienced, and it makes it impossible for the Spanish government to pursue any future lockdowns again. So that's it seems to me, where we stand at the moment. So that's Spain. Now, that might not be directly applicable in all other European countries, but the country to watch, the really important two countries, in my opinion, are Germany and France. Both Germany and France have constitutions which entrench freedoms very strongly, especially France has a tradition going all the way back to the French Revolution. So, and they have a very strong court systems, and we will see what those courts, the constitutional courts, the Council of State in France and the Constitutional Court in Germany, in Karlsruhe, what they have to say. But of course, if the German Constitutional Court says that the lockdowns in Germany were illegal, well, then, I mean, you know, the whole system of lockdowns collapses. So, you know, this is an this is a very important case. Now, I do want to emphasise again, because people conflate human rights with the European Convention on Human Rights. This clearly is an issue of Spanish constitutional law. And it may not be binding in other countries, but it does have the effect of an example. And the fact that it's been done at that high level by a particular court, that is extraordinarily significant.
Okay, so let me read you an excerpt from the Associated Press with regards to Spain. Then we'll focus on France and Germany, yeah, and then we'll move to Greece. So here's an excerpt. I want you to comment on this. It's from the Associated Press. And here is what they say, quote, while leaving intact most of the state of emergency's terms, the court said that the key articles ordering the population off the streets, except for short trips, for shopping and unavoidable commutes for work and other official business, were unconstitutional, end quote.
Well, there it is. I mean, you know, that's one of the fundamental aspects of the lockdown. Now, I'm going to make a guess that some of the other provisions were said to be constitutional because, as I said, they were in conformity with human rights legislation. But the key point about the lockdowns were about the limitations of people's movements. So that is, to my mind, a fundamental and very important precedent.
Yeah, according to TVE, the ruling said that the limitations on movement violated citizens' basic rights and therefore the state of emergency was insufficient to give them constitutional backing. The six magistrates said that a state of exception, which does allow the government to suspend basic rights, would have been necessary, end quote.
Yes, I know. Well, I mean, these are Spanish provisions, which I don't fully know about. I mean, it may be also that the Spanish government didn't follow certain procedures here. But, I mean, this is an important decision. I mean, I said before, we had various decisions from lower courts. Most of the decisions in lower courts, by the way, tended to go the other direction. They tended to support the lockdowns. But we talked about other courts in other countries, lower court cases. This is a very senior court, top Spanish court, and it's now said that one of the key provisions was unconstitutional, and that could start to set a trend amongst the higher courts in other countries. We shall see.
All right, so that's Spain. Let's go to France and Germany. Angela Merkel is out in September, so let me preface it with that by saying she's gone in September. At least that's what that's what we're led to believe. Great, so she's leaving in September. She has promised that she will not make passports mandatory. That was her promise to the world. She made that statement to the German citizens and to the world. She says, I will not make passports mandatory for non-essential services. Macron has. He has made it mandatory. People took to the streets, Bastille Day. They were very upset. Things got violent. Wasn't too bad, but they got violent. It was a lot of people, Alexander, out on the streets. They are not happy with this health pass that Macron is talking about, which is set to go into effect in August. Of course, Macron and many of the people that are talking about these health passes and safe passes say it's only going to be for a month. That is what they're saying. Of course, we know that's a lie. But what do you make about Merkel's promise? What do you make of the fact that Macron has just pretty much come out and done it? I think, in my opinion, it signals to the fact that he's not really caring too much about re-election. Maybe he's kind of accepted the fact that he's not going to win, so he might as well just pass whatever unpopular things that need to be passed, according to the people that tell him to do stuff. So he's just, you know, he's not concerned about election. Where maybe Merkel, or at least the CDU, is concerned about things going forward, given the fact that Merkel's on her way out and they don't want to push the people too far. And there is going to be a protest, from what I understand from our German viewers. I believe there are going to be protests in Germany on the 1st of August. I may be wrong about that date, but I believe it's the 1st of August. There will be protests in Germany as well.
Yeah, let's first of all begin. I mean, this is a position where every single government in Europe, all the European governments, including Russia's, by the way, all were saying last year that there's no conceivable way we're going to have passports for QR codes or compulsory things and any of that. And within a few months, they've all reversed themselves. And one after the other, they're starting to do it. Russia's, by the way, was the first. They did it. They did it in a very, very sly way, because what they did, and first what they did was they didn't promote any sort of campaign for people to actually take the medication. And also they didn't impose lockdowns to any degree. So then they allowed the case numbers to rise. They said the case numbers have risen and said, this is all your fault, the people's fault. So therefore, since you're to blame for this, you must now face compulsory things, and lots of sectors, lots of workers, key workers, as they say, which gradually will include the entire workforce, are now legally required to accept these medications. And of course you have QR codes and all the rest. And because they did it in this very sly way, in which they made people feel that they were to blame for this, so far it's happened quite quietly. I mean, people haven't protested. But that's Russia. France is, of course, a very different kind of society. People are already very angry with the government over many things. Macron is already unpopular. It has a very, very strong tradition of being libertarian, very strong libertarian tradition in France. Also, people were given exactly the same promise. None of this was ever going to happen. And, of course, it was done. And again, in the way that Macron always does this, he doesn't sort of prepare the ground. He just comes out, makes the Napoleonic decree. Everybody's obliged to do this, completely reverses the policy. And of course, people protest and they're very angry and they come out on the streets, as they do in France, and they meet fierce resistance from the security forces, as they also do in France. And that's what's happening in France. So that's what Macron has done. As I said, he wasn't as cunning as Putin and the Russian government were, which, as I said, managed to shift the blame for it onto the population. Germany is, in my opinion, going to go exactly the same way as France, in the sense that, again, you see, you had all those assurances, again, you had all those promises. They won't be implemented until the September elections are out of the way. Exactly the reason that you said. I think that they're going to hold back until the elections in September, and then they're going to turn around and impose it. And then again, you're going to see big protests in Germany, because again, Germany, first of all, Germany does have a very strong libertarian tradition. I know people have this stereotype about Germans, you know, being people who always submit to authority and all that. It's only very partially true in my experience. The Germans have a very strong anti-authoritarian tradition. And by the way, their past history has reinforced it. So I think you're going to see big protests, very big protests in Germany come the autumn as well. And I'm going to tell you something. Britain is going to go the same way. I can see this too. I mean, there was supposed to be an end to the lockdowns next week, but already we're starting to see that isn't quite going to happen. And again, we're starting to see QR codes begin to appear. You already see that in various places. And I strongly suspect, I'm absolutely sure that come the autumn, we're going to see it universally imposed. One thing I would say, big important point about Britain, is that the people who are the most sceptical about this are the Conservative Party. The people who are advocating it most full-bloodedly is the opposition Labour Party and the other opposition parties. So that there may be a lot of protests, isn't going to find much political expression.
So you're saying that people in the UK, when they do roll this out, you are saying that they will hit the streets or no?
I think there will be. I think there certainly will be protests in the streets, probably substantial ones. But what I'm saying is the political system will not respond to that, because all of the parties essentially are united in supporting this. The government is edging towards doing these sort of things. The opposition wants the government to go much further. And that's, I think, a bit different from what you find in other places in Europe, say in France or Germany or elsewhere. Of course, Russia, it doesn't apply to the same degree, because the opposition basically does what the government tells it. So that's a different sort of situation, scenario there. But in Britain, where we have a very strong tradition of libertarianism and people's sense of right to protection for their family lives and all the rest, there is no very little real call for it outside the libertarian wing of the Conservative Party itself, which is not the majority.
Right.
So
okay,
all those promises made last year, by the end of this year, they'll all have gone.
Yeah, it's just 2 weeks to flatten the curve. Alexander, I want to stay before we go to Greece. Your thoughts on Russia real quick. A lot of people always ask the question, is Putin part of the globalist clique? Why would Putin make a promise? And he did make a promise. We have to be fair. Oh, yeah. He made a promise. I think he said it during one of his Q&As. I mean, he was explicit. He says there is no way we will make things mandatory. And sure enough, they have made things mandatory. Big disappointment on the face of it.
It wasn't done in a Q&A. I'll tell you exactly how it was done. The Kremlin.
No, the statement that he made.
I'll explain how the statement that he made. It was done in a somewhat different way. Firstly, they put up Medvedev, the previous president, to say that they should go for compulsory medications. Then Putin issued a public statement saying that he was against it and it wouldn't happen. And then a few months later, it started to be rolled out. Now, I think the Russian thing, as I said, I think that they always wanted it. It was always very much the intention to do it. I don't think that this is, from their point of view, part of any, that they're part of any globalist agenda. I don't think China is. China, by the way, also does it compulsorily. But I think that these are societies, Russia and China, where that has been the tradition. And can I just say, Putin made that precise point. He said in his recent Q&A that in the Soviet period, that was what happened. You were obliged to accept whatever medications you were given in the autumn of each year. And I think he made it fairly clear that he wanted to see a return to that system. That's the system that exists in China now. And I think it suits their domestic agenda to do it.
Yeah, but can you address the QR? I understand the compulsory, the tradition back in the Soviet times that you had to do whatever medications they told you to. I understand that. But can you address the QR code thing in the non-essential services? Because I have friends who are in Moscow, and they tell me if I want to enter an establishment, I have to. And I think that many places have the scanning now, which I think Europe hasn't rolled out the scanning yet, but they will. But many places you have to, take your phone and scan it through. Isn't that a human rights thing as well?
It's far more pervasive than anything you will find in Europe. and far more organized and clearly had been prepared in advance. I mean, I'm saying this quite straightforwardly. Now, what it is you have certain categories of workers, one after the other. They are obliged to take these medications. They are actually being required to do so by actual decrees. So, you know, they started with workers in the service industries, and they're now gradually moving along the line. So one block after another, they have to. Now, the other people, everyone else, they say, and this is what they say, and it's just, you know, that other people are free, whether they want to or not, you know, it's up to them. But they cannot, in that case, access certain restaurants and shops and pubs and all the rest unless they do, and that means getting these QR codes. So steadily, they're making it compulsory for ever larger categories of the population. But those for whom it is not yet compulsory, they are being pushed to do it because they are being denied increasing access to more and more retail services through this mechanism of the QR codes. And of course, I ought to make it clear that people who are obliged to, by law, to take these kinds of treatments, they get QR codes as well. So ultimately, what the objective is, you know, complete compulsory medication for everyone. That's the plan. I mean, I don't have any doubt about it.
Yeah, but one more question on Putin and Russia. And let me take this from a PR perspective, from a marketing perspective. Yeah. If the rest of the world wasn't doing the QR code thing, and I'm sticking on the QR code because I believe we're heading towards a social credit score like China does, and medications will be a thing of the past. As all of this progresses. But if the rest of the world wasn't doing the QR code, or say the EU and the United States, for some reason, they decide to pull back on the QR code and getting everything on an application of your mobile phone and doing the social credit score, say they pull back for some reason, but Russia continues towards this path. From a PR perspective, doesn't that reinforce the Putin is an authoritarian leader narrative, where these countries, and I'm throwing a hypothetical in there in a way, but just for the discussion, doesn't that reinforce the fact that these countries can then say, well, we didn't implement, I don't know, say Merkel says, well, we didn't make it mandatory. We didn't force citizens to download a QR code and scan it to get into Starbucks. But Putin is doing it, you see, authoritarian, just like China. I mean, It, from a PR perspective, doesn't that kind of look bad?
I'm sure it does, but I mean, clearly it's not his primary concern. I mean, he clearly wants to do this because, as I said, it's one way of increasing his reach, the government's control, from that point of view, I don't think he particularly cares. So, I mean, you know, what the West says anymore doesn't gain any real traction with him. So he'll do it. He'll see it done. China is, of course, doing it on a much bigger scale. And Russia, I think, if you want me to say, the Russians are influenced by what the Chinese have done, and that's why they're following it. And if the West makes it an issue, well, could just shrug his shoulders and say, well, that's the West for you. I mean, you know, what the West says, I don't really care about anymore. That is the point. I want to make a general observation. You know, we are sometimes accused of being pro-Russian. What we are is realistic. We are realists. We understand a lot about Russia. I mean, you've lived there. And we have no illusions either about what it is or about what it is not. So it's not, you know, it's not Mordor or a country, you know, out to world domination or anything that in some ways is very organized, extremely, it's become increasingly prosperous, law abiding and all sorts of things. But it's not, you know, a country that it doesn't have, shall we say, its authoritarian proclivities. And we've never claimed that it was. I mean, you know, that's a point I think people need to understand.
Yeah. It's just interesting that this may end up, and it may, I'm not saying it will, because the whole world is moving towards this QR code thing, but if that wasn't the case, this could have been used against Putin, where before, when he made the statement that I'm not going to make it mandatory, actually put him in a position of being, you know, someone who champions individual freedoms. You see what I'm saying? The difference is there. Before, when he said, we're not going to make it mandatory, everyone was like, you know, that's a leader. That's someone that believes in bodily autonomy and freedom. And so it's interesting to see how things have changed. And now the question is, oh, well, Putin's doing it. You see, he's acting in the way of China or, you know, what my country is doing by making this mandatory. So authoritarianism everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, self-evidently, he's not someone who is a libertarian. I mean, the PR aspects of it. But ultimately, as I said, it does increase the reach of his control. And as I said, the one thing which I would say is that up to now, he's managed to make it work more successfully than you see somewhere in, like in France. I mean, they've managed it in Russia without provoking protests and all that sort of thing. Now, that's partly, as I said, because of the population. I mean, you know, but it's also because they managed it with real political skill. I mean, they didn't impose lockdowns over the autumn and winter. And they made it very easy both to get medicated and not to get medicated. And when people didn't, and then the case count, as they said, went up. Well, they said, well, it's all your fault. You see, you didn't get medicated. So now we're justified in doing this thing. And, you know, people, because they're not told otherwise, have taken it, have accepted it.
Yeah, so far they've avoided the protests. Yes. Okay, so let's turn to Greece now. The Greeks have been quiet so far. There haven't been many protests about what's been going on for the past year and a half. But now, finally, Alexander, they have hit the streets. And contrary to some of the mainstream media reports, I know the areas, you know the areas. These are big squares, Sindagma, these are big squares, and they were full, which to me signals that there were a lot of people that hit the streets. People are not happy about the fact that they're going to need some QR code or some type of health or safe pass in order to enter a cafe. Greeks love their cafes. And boy, did they hit the streets against this ruling from Mitsotakis. Now, once the Greeks get going, you know this, Alexander, once they get going in their protests, we're a stubborn bunch, and we can protest day after day, week after week, until governments fall. We have that in us once we get going. Absolutely. I don't know if that's going to be the case. I don't know if this will stick, if people are going to continue to hit the streets. We'll see. But this is the first big outing from the Greeks. And let me read you a statement from Mitsotakis, the prime minister, in response to, one, the decree that has been passed about getting people QR'd up so that they can enter their favorite places or partake in non-essential services activities. And his response to the fact that there were Greeks out on the streets. This is what he said. And I think this is a interesting quote and a reckless quote. Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis, quote, "After a year and a half, no one can claim ignorance about the coup anymore. The country will not shut down again due to attitudes adopted by certain people. It's not Greece that's a danger, but Greeks who have not taken the shot." I changed the words a little, end quote. But he says Greeks are a danger that have not taken the shot. I find this to be a very, to blame Greeks the way he does is very, very troubling.
Yeah. Well, indeed. I mean, what he's trying to do, in a way, is what Putin, as I said, much more cleverly did in Russia. But, of course, the fundamental difference is that Greece has gone through multiple lockdowns, and this comes on top of which Russia tended to avoid. And, of course, it's also come on top of a very rickety economic situation. And that's putting it mildly. I mean, Greece has been in effect in recession continuously since the late 2000s. So, I mean, you know, I think many people in Greece will find this insulting, actually. And I think this is going to actually add to the protests. Now, Mitsotakis has never struck me as a person with a popular touch or a real feeling for how people are. And I think what is now going to happen is that when he became prime minister, there was a lot of relief that the previous government had gone. And it seemed things were going to get at least more stable in a kind of way. I don't think people had much expectations of him. But I think that has now been shattered. And I think you're absolutely right. Protests are now hitting the streets. They're going to involve more and more people. I think this is an extraordinarily maladroit statement. It's going to increase protests much more because, you see, it blames the people for what has happened. We're going to see protests escalate, and the politics of this are difficult to gauge because Greece, again, doesn't have a good and effective party system. I mean, Syriza remains and is a hopeless case anyway, but Greece is more unpredictable and much more volatile than, say, Britain is. I mean, I said that in Britain there was massive opposition, but no reflection for it in the political system. In Greece, things can change much faster. So we'll see. I think this is the end. This has shattered the period when the new government, the Mitsotakis government, looked like it was in full control of Greece, and the sort of period of eerie stability that we saw after it came in. Because, again, I think this is incredibly badly done. You know, whether you agree with it or not, it was done in the most awful way. It has provoked massive opposition, and that opposition will continue and it will grow.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of two things. One is Bush's statement after 9/11, where he's like, either you're with us or you're against us. And then Hillary Clinton's basket of deplorables. Because in Mitsotakis' statement, he clearly says that some Greeks are good, but other Greeks are bad, and they're the ones to blame. And he says, and then he throws a threat out there, and he says, the country will not shut down again due to the attitudes adopted by certain people. He's making a threat, and he's saying, you know, there's certain people in society that we need to shun, and we're not going to shut down again unless, you know, these people continue to act the way they do. Their attitude doesn't change. Yes, he is really pitting Greek against Greek with this statement. I think it's
exactly.
It's very troubling to hear that from a Greek prime minister. I was very shocked by this statement.
Well, it is a shocking one. It is setting Greek against Greek. It is dividing Greek society, and it's going to create enormous problems. And it shows a prime minister who's not only completely out of touch, but who comes across actually as not liking his own people very much. That's how it comes across to me as an elitist. Very much an elitist person who functions in elitist circles. Now, as I said, Putin, he didn't do that. They didn't come along and say, well, you know, some Russians have misbehaved. What they said is, you know, none of us acted properly. We didn't do it. So now we have to, because, you know, we have to do it because that's the way we're going to save the motherland and all of this. They didn't blame particular categories of people. They did it much more cunningly and cleverly than this. This is, as I said, of a deeply elitist it's not democratic, actually, to talk in this way. I mean, he has to realise that the people he's criticising, the electorate he's dividing in that fashion, is the electorate that he's ultimately accountable to. So to talk in that way is shocking.
Can I make a final statement for you to close out this video, Alexander? Greece has always had great relations with France. The French have always supported Greece.
I knew you were going to ask. I knew you were going to ask me this. Carry on.
You know, both France and Greece protests pretty much the same day. Both leaders pretty much come up with the same policy. I mean, it's pretty much the same thing that they're both announcing. And they both do it in kind of the same way. Is Mitsotakis becoming a Macron-like figure? And is this the right person for him to be emulating?
Well, the answer is yes, he is becoming a Macron-like figure. And no, it is not the person he should be emulating. I think the coincidence is so strong that I don't think it's a coincidence at all. I think that basically and briefly, Mitsotakis is copying Macron, and I'm sure the two were talking about it to each other. Greece, as you said, and France are very close. The two leaders are known to be very close. And, you know, Macron said, you know, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this in France. You know, I'm going to be like Napoleon in France. And Mitsotakis says, I'm going to do the same in Greece. And both of them are then astounded when their respective populations are infuriated and come out protesting. And both show a complete lack of judgment and understanding of their own populations. And both of them ultimately are privileged, elitist people with very little idea of how many of their own countrymen and women actually live and the kind of pressures they're under. And it's entirely unsurprising that these two people have come together and made the same mistake. I'm going to make one observation, by the way. I don't agree with you on one point. I don't think that Macron imposed this thing, thinking, with the knowledge that it would lose him the election next year. I think, on the contrary, he thought that, you know, he'd be able to show that he's Jupiter or Napoleon. or Louis XIV. He would impose this grand decree, and everybody in France would be in awe of his splendor and majesty and autocratic power, and that it would actually rally support to him. I think I genuinely and sincerely believe that's what he thought. I mean, he's vain enough to think that, and he does think like that. So I think that was why he did it. I think, on the contrary, he thought that it would be a vote winner, because Macron has consistently got the French wrong. And it's very worrying to see that Mitsotakis is going the same way. But, I mean, I've never really felt that Mitsotakis had a real feeling for the pulse of Greece. The problem the advantage Mitsotakis had was that the Greek people were so demoralised that they were prepared to give him a lot of political space and political time. But he hasn't used it well. And given who he is, he squandered it. I mean, he wasn't going to use it well, because he's a person who's trapped inside conventional thinking.
Yeah. Final question, real quick. Do you see any EU leader that's going to buck the trends and perhaps go a different direction on all of this? QR codes, scanning QR codes for non-essential services. Any EU leader? Because obviously, all the EU is going to roll this out for the most part. Anyone that comes to mind that may say, you know what, guys, may go to Brussels and say, you know what, guys, sorry, I'm not going to go this route with all of you on this QR stuff.
I don't know of one. The two obvious exceptions, the two, you know, people who tend to resist the EU dictates, Hungary and Poland. I don't think they're doing that at the moment. Because, I mean, I think, on the contrary, Hungary has been as active as any other country. So I don't know of anyone at the moment in the EU who is taking that line. I don't know of anybody in the world who is, to be straightforward. Any government, anywhere
in the
world.
The US, maybe. On a state level.
That's a very good point, yeah.
And Canada on a province level as well. But
I agree.
I accept that.
In the United States, Canada perhaps are the exceptions. Are the exceptions? But pretty much everywhere else that I know of, I mean, of the countries that I am familiar with and whose events I follow, they've all taken this approach sooner or later. And I don't know of anyone who's actually stood out and opposed it, and I certainly don't know anybody in the EU. If anybody from any EU country wants to come along and tell us, you know, that their policies of their government are different, well, please do let us know, and we would be very interested. But I can't think of one.
All right. Fascinating video. Anything else you want to add, Alexander, before we sign off?
Well, I have to say, I think we are going to be in the world of QR codes now for pretty much everything. I mean, I remember when I went to China in 2017 and I saw them. I saw them, for the first time, I thought there was some strange exotic thing. I saw them in shops, shop windows and all that. And I didn't understand what they were. And now, of course, they've spread to Britain and they've not just been used for that. They've been used for all kinds of other things. And I think that's the reality. That's the future. Whether or not the future will turn out exactly as the people who promote these things expect is another matter. Technology has a strange way of subverting the intentions of those who create it. So it may not work out quite as they expect. But that's certainly the agenda at the moment.
Where are the lawyers on all of this, the human rights lawyers? I mean, we opened up with the Spanish case, but for the most part, we haven't really had huge decisions or lawyers really getting out championing human rights and autonomy and all these things. Where are they?
Well, I've already said, I mean, if you read the European Convention on Human Rights, you would be disappointed because, as I said, it actually expressly and explicitly allows for restrictions on people's freedoms in order to protect public health, as it says. It actually is explicitly written in the relevant article. So, and I'm going to say something else. Human rights lawyers, this is my own personal experience in Britain, and it may be different in other countries, I've never found them as a cadre of people particularly impressive. Maybe in some countries like the United States they are, but it's never been the area of the law which, in my opinion, attracts the best minds, if I have to say it. Constitutional lawyers, it's a different story, completely different story. You get a far higher caliber of people interested in constitutional and administrative law. And of course, constitutional and administrative courts have existed for far longer than the European Convention, a Court of Human Rights, has done, and have a far better and far more highly developed tradition of jurisprudence. So I'm not surprised that the first challenge to this has come from a constitutional court, and I would expect to see more of it happening as we move on. But don't expect much from the human rights law community. I never really saw it as the people who would challenge that. Suffice to say, think of all the NGOs that involve themselves with human rights. I mean, are you impressed by any of them?
Yeah. So is the way that you fight this, like say the way the people fight this, is the way to go at it from a constitutional level and not from a human rights level?
Absolutely. I mean, I certainly think so. I mean, if you talk about France, I mean, I would say that the traditions, the human rights traditions in France, go far beyond what you'd find in the European Convention on Human Rights. I say that straightforwardly. I mean, France, as far as I know, was the first country which said that everything is allowed except that which is specifically forbidden. And that was a revolutionary idea back in 1789 when it was first proposed. And then the French took that idea and they went much further with it. So it has a very, very strong libertarian tradition in France, which is very much in the French legal DNA and in the French constitutional legal DNA especially. So that's certainly a route there. And don't underestimate, as I said, the German constitutional court and German constitutional lawyers and attitudes about this sort in Germany as well. Well, there's a very strong tradition there too, and a very, very high-powered sense of jurisprudence. I think the Vox Party took entirely the right course by going to the Spanish Constitutional Court and challenging it in that way, instead of contacting a human rights commissioner in Brussels or something of that kind. I don't think that would have got them anywhere.
Right. All right. We will leave it there, guys. Real News, 10% off Duran merch, and check us out on Locals and Super U, the free speech video platform. Take care.